We're on.
Okay, this is the continuation, part two here of our January 28, 2015 board time. I need to make sure that we identify the reason that we went into executive session. Anytime we talk about comprehensive plan update, there's always consideration for possible litigation, so we want to make sure we make informed decisions so we avoid that if all possible. So that was our explanation. Okay, with this, I will open it up to Jeannie Stewart.
So I'm going to make a motion that we move both Part A, a vote to release a legal staff report appropriately for this Ridgefield UGA issue, and that we take a vote to accept or reject Ridgefield's request in the process of a regular Board of County Commissioners consent meeting.
I'll second that.
Okay. And just for clarification, I understand that's two parts. The first part was to authorize our prosecuting attorney to release a appropriate version of a report back to the Ridgefield City having to do with this topic at your, and I would assume that would be before the hearing, because then they can be prepared for the hearing. And the second part would be to bring B back on the consent item, a consent agenda for this coming Tuesday.
Correct. That is my motion.
Well, I would imagine we'd bring them both back as one action at that time. Because they would both become public at that time, and they both have to do with the same subject.
Well, your staff report, Chris, will detail the rationale.
If it's in the form of a staff report,
yes,
it would come out earlier than the actual public hearing.
And it would be available online.
Yes, on the grid, right.
So
right. Like
that's
the Thursday
good.
Prior.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Whether it be a prosecuting attorney's opinion or whether it be a staff report, some explanation is we are voting today. The motion, just to clarify, the motion is to authorize a staff report, whatever contribution that is from the PA's office or from planning, to release that as early as possible so that they have our rationale ahead of time, so that when a consent item shows up, that they can respond to our rationale.
And my motion would be that be released in the normal course of the public hearing documents.
Which is going to be tough for you, Chris, because you're in a board time hearing and you can't be writing the staff report, which we typically we post it on our website usually on Thursday. So she's
tomorrow morning.
Just use your clone.
Yeah,
so
that's it.
Okay.
Yeah,
my motion has been made in full.
Okay.
And I have seconded.
Okay. And I understand for minutes we got to get this right. So the minutes. Just for clarification, would be the motion is to authorize a staff report in the normal means that we do so for the Tuesday's vote on this issue.
Tuesday consent item.
Yeah, okay.
On the agenda.
Got it. All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Okay. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
I think that wraps you up.
So are we going to jump down to Mike to the bills at the bottom?
That sounds like a good time. We want to make sure we entertain our trail and moment here.
We went over, so Dr. Melnick's going to spend some more time. High dollar people are going to spend some time here.
Okay, so I understand we have, this has to do with e-cigarettes, and there are two bills, one in the House and one in the Senate. While you're calling. So Paul Harris has got the 1645.
Mike, are you there?
Ann Rivers has Senate Bill 5573.
I brought them all. I brought copies of both bills.
Great.
And my interest in destroying
paper and trees.
And what, I don't know if Mark explained what he's handing out, but that's a really good summary of what the bill does, section by section.
And I got copies of the summary.
Hey, sorry, I'm going to put you on the speaker, you ready?
It's printed on both sides and it's built.
Are you there?
Save those trees.
Okay, hold on.
Do you want copies of the summary of the bills? I'll go through.
Oh, that's what we did, we already had.
Oh, you have these?
Yeah, if you have the Senate summary, that'd be good.
They're really the same bill.
Oh, really?
So we've already given them the summary from the House bill.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same bill.
Okay.
So, and actually, I think Mike Burgess spoke with Brad Banks, who's our Basalto person at WASAC, and I believe, and we can talk a little bit more about WASAC on this also, because there's a tax associated with this. I think I mentioned to you earlier that 10% goes to public health, and we want to see if it, what was WASAC is supportive of bumping that up to 30%.
Yeah. So kind of just in summary, and so I'll tee this up a little bit, Mike. Hold on. The summary of the bill you have in front of you, it's 4 pages long. The first 2.5 pages are how e-cigarettes will be regulated, and it's very much bringing them in line with how cigarettes are regulated. So you can't purchase them if you're under 18. They have to be sold in certain ways, and all kinds of regulations that go along with that. Like Dr. Melnick said, the second piece of the bill puts a tax on e-cigarette sales, 95% tax. Most of that goes straight away to the state general fund. There is a portion that goes elsewhere for public health purposes.
I think 10% goes to the public, central public health services.
Which can kind of come down through the chains of grants and things to local public health departments.
Correct.
So I think the WASAC position currently is, I don't know that they've taken a position on the bill, but they've taken a position thus far of if this bill passes and e-cigarettes are brought in line with regular tobacco products and there's a tax, we'd like to see more of that tax go to the local jurisdictions to try to take care of some of these issues. So that's kind of the summary. Like I said, most of that summary deals with the new regulations, and the last page deals with the tax. Mike, do you want to add anything, or Dr. Mellon?
Well, the one exception to the way cigarettes are regulated is this pretty much does everything except it doesn't require vaping devices to be subject to the smoking in indoor places statute. The other thing it does, but also a good thing it does, is it doesn't preempts local governments from imposing additional restrictions. So the bill basically says if you wanted to impose additional restrictions down the road, you could do that. But the bills as written don't make these devices comply with the SIP law. Other than that, possession by minors, use on school property, all the other things we've talked about, these also prohibit the use of flavoring products in these devices. And there's also a piece, I think, that's a little different than cigarettes is, if you look on page 2 under section 114 of your summary here, it prohibits the sale of a vapor product containing something that increases the absorption of nicotine, because they're making these products to actually increase the absorption of nicotine, or other psychoactive chemicals. And we discussed how now people are putting THC, the component in marijuana, into these devices. I think they're called juju joints or whatever the term is being used for them.
One other interesting thing I found on page 3, section 120, there's no preemption in here from the state. So it provides nothing that preempts local governments from imposing additional restrictions on the sale, purchase, use, mm-hmm. or promotion. So that's kind of interesting.
So on that page 3, at the very bottom, 203, it speaks of a dedicated amount, but does not say what that dedicated amount is. So I'm always leery of that.
Well, these are taxed at 95%, so their prices, whatever they're sold at, is taxed at 95%. Right now, of that amount, I don't know that anybody knows how much that would be. 90% would go to state general fund, and 10% would go to public health services. I think WASAC's position, which I tend to like, basically says that 30% would need to go to public health, and I think we need to also support it going to local health jurisdictions.
That's what the intent of the tax is supposed to be, and health is only getting 10%.
Yeah. like to see it get more. So.
Well, it should. I mean, that's the intent of the tax. So.
Mike, did you have anything to add from your conversations?
No. Well, Commissioner Mielke, I'm looking up on the governor's website because he assumed this in his budget. And I'm assuming, let's see, this is from the governor's budget highlights. Increase the state cigarette tax by 50 cents. That's different. Start with taxing e-cigarettes and vapor products, which together will raise about $56 million.
You gotta speak a little, Mike. Speak a little clearer, would you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, sorry, my printer. I just started my printer because I wanted to print something. The cigarette tax. The governor proposed imposing an additional cigarette tax of 50 cents, and then taxing e-cigarettes and vapor. So the combination of those two in his budget proposal nets out $56 million. But the problem is I can't tell which of that amount is from cigarettes and which is from e-cigarettes and vapor. So to estimate what the dollar amount is, because I think that's what you were asking, Commissioner Mielke, specifically what the dollar amount would be.
Not necessarily, Mike. I just the percentage that we'd be given to help out in the health. Is so little, and it looks like they want to use it to balance the state budget and not help out in the health needs. Just
well,
a comment.
I understand what you're saying, and I think that's what, I believe it's Dr. Miller, correct?
Yeah.
Dr. Miller mentioned that one of WASAC's positions would be to increase the 10% amount higher. I've heard the 30% number kicked around. I've heard other numbers kicked around, but certainly to devote more of that revenue towards public health.
Yes.
And it would be nice for that specifically to go to local jurisdictions if possible as well. I don't know if WASAC
I believe it would, correct? There's a working group or whatnot that would be set up that would come up with the formula as to how that money's dispersed.
Yeah.
And Mike, I would think 50-50 would be more like it.
Certainly understand where you're coming from, Counselor. As you know, there's budget constraints up here, and there will be push and pull on just how much revenue we can get. We can support, you know, Wasafo's advocacy of that, of a larger percentage. This bill was introduced, a version of this bill on the tax side was introduced late last session. I just want to give you a flavor for what it's like up here. It was very controversial in terms of applying in this case, it's not necessarily the OTP tax, but that's what it did last year, and that stands for other tobacco products, which is essentially everything but cigarettes. And there was a strong contingent of folks in the vapor community that came out in opposition to the bill. That ultimately stopped it from passing last year. You know, there is debate as to whether or not these things do cause issues or health issues. I think you'd find studies on both sides. I do know that the feds are looking at this right now, the USDA and I believe the FDA together, or maybe at least one of the two, to do some sort of a classification on this. I'm sure, you know, Dr. Mavis, you might know more about that than I do. But that all fits into this debate right now. But that's just kind of background information on what's happened here with it.
No, Mike, I kind of view it as a year ago, I think the legislators didn't have as much knowledge as they have today as to the abuse of what they've used the e-cigarette for. So hopefully that they are more educated today than they were a year ago.
Sure.
Okay. So bottom line on this, we can have a consensus here to support both of these bills?
Yeah, I think we support both of those bills, but sure would be encouraging to have an amendment put on somewhere to give our local health departments more money. I still remember the $4 million they took away about 4 years ago.
I spoke to Representative Harris, and he was very receptive to increasing the amount.
That would be great.
Okay. All right. So, yep.
So rather than, as this has been written, which is 90% to state general fund and 10% to essential public Health Services, we're asking our lobbyists to move that more to 30% or more.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep. Okay, so do we have a consensus on that?
Yes.
We do.
Okay, we do. We're good. Okay. Thank you.
Mike, you got that?
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, I don't know if we have time for this. I'll let the chair decide, but I know one of our bills does have a hearing this afternoon. You want to briefly touch on that?
Yeah, sure. This is the stormwater, what I refer to as the stormwater flexibility bill, the one that would end the practice, or I guess in the law that said that the money that you collect from the DOT facilities has to be used on their own facilities.
Yes.
It would let you pool the money into your general stormwater account or whatever you call it, and you could spend it on those projects. We have that hearing this afternoon at 3:30.
Okay.
Great.
That is a huge bill that we would really appreciate getting.
Well, and Councilor, we will be taking the first step this afternoon after the hearing, and I'll let Axel know how it goes.
Mike, it's more important that we remind them that they get a 70% discount, then they dictate that we can only use it on their projects.
Yeah.
Okay, we're good, Mike?
I am, unless you all have any other questions on other items.
Any other questions?
None.
Okay, we're good. Thank you.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
Axel.
Yes.
Is that a Senate transportation bill?
It is in the Senate committee.
Do we know what it is?
I can't remember the number off the top of my head.
We don't know the number? Yeah.
I have it on my desk.
Okay, if you can remind us later what that is. Because I'll want to coordinate that with whatever the general WASAC legislative agenda is, if that's an item we've already done.
Yep, I'll get it.
Okay,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
May I propose an amendment to the agenda?
Okay.
While we have Dr. Melnick here, at a recent, last fall I believe it was, Dr. Melnick had Public Health in Action. He made a presentation on adverse child experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Where things that happen to kids when they're young can result in difficulty later in life.
Very calm.
And I think he talked about the grant monies that help fund those activities here at the county.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the window for applying for another grant is open, and it closes on Friday.
Okay.
So I have a staff report here that I'd like to put on the agenda for Tuesday's hearing,
mm-hmm.
but I'd like the board to consider approving granting him the approval to submit the grant application on Friday and then have you ratify that action in the board hearing next Tuesday.
Sure. And that's 100% grant. There's no local funds involved.
And for the benefit of Councillor Stewart, you might just give a brief talk about, were you here for that?
We've had a one-on-one discussion about
ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, or his department in
adverse childhood experiences.
Okay, great.
And the carry forward.
This is the we've been in partnership with the City of Battleground.
We have copies of this.
Particularly yep. the Chief of Police there, and along one of the things that we'd like to do, and we actually the community foundation invited us to write this grant, is to develop to work with the Battleground Police Department to train officers to be what we would call trauma-informed officers. So what happens with when kids as very young suffer adverse childhood experiences, it increases their likelihood, besides developing chronic disease, to also get in trouble with the law later and have juvenile problems. And sometimes when you're dealing with teenagers who've been abused or suffered adverse childhood experiences, how you deal with them is critical because you can actually recreate the trauma that they suffered when they were very young and make it more difficult to deal with them and get them and help them. So Chief Richardson with Battleground Police Department, he's on our Public Health Advisory Council. He's very interested in having his officers trained to be trauma-informed officers. So it's kind of like a pilot to see how this works. And remember, Battleground was a particular area where we had an issue around adolescent suicides and suicide attempts recently, within the last few years. And so adolescent suicide is related to adverse childhood experiences. So this is an opportunity to work with
if we get this grant, and I think we will, be an opportunity for us to work with law enforcement and be an interesting pilot.
This is not a matching grant.
This is not a matching grant.
So this is state funds the whole thing.
These are foundation funds, so they're private community foundation funds.
Versus local funds. There's
right.
No local funds.
No, there's
sure.
No. There's. Okay. We're not asking for any additional funding from the county.
We've done this in the past. This is not the first time, right?
First time.
To apply for this grant.
This is the first time applying for this particular grant.
Okay.
It's a new one.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark, for bringing that.
Yeah, and I might add that he will need new budget authority to extend these monies and to recognize the revenue, so that Jeff Harbison will put in a decision package for the spring supplemental.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't add that. It is additional to our budget.
So the request today is to authorize you to submit the application because the deadline is closing on Friday.
Correct.
Okay. And what would the revenue be? On the agenda for
it. And put it on the agenda to ratify.
Correct.
A question?
Sure.
When I see Community Foundation up in capital letters, can you just give me a very brief understanding of what that is?
Boy, it's a private nonprofit foundation. I'd have to. It's within our area. It's not national.
Then I know exactly who it is. Yes. Okay.
Rich Melnick.
It's a private nonprofit.
Correct.
In our area, that is sort of regional and is very solid and discreet.
Yes, and they're definitely interested in supporting activities like this in Clark County in Southwest Washington.
And the clusters of teen suicides. That really is a phenomenon that we need to do everything we can to understand better.
Right, it's the number two cause of death in teenagers.
What's the first one?
Trauma, non-intentional injuries like traffic, car accidents and things like that.
That was smoking.
That's the number one cause of death, period. But it
okay.
And if you must
start calling.
I would move that we approve Dr. Melnick moving forward with a submission of an application to the Community Foundation for a 3-year grant of up to $155,000 for the purposes outlined in the memo before us. In the background section, and that does this need to come forward to a public?
Yes, you'll need to validate it in a hearing.
That would it be a consent item?
It would.
And that we move this forward to a consent item on the Clark County Board of Commissioners hearing.
Come back
for ratification.
For ratification.
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
I think we only have to wait until a public hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thanks for reminding me that I have one.
Yeah, Tuesday, it'll still come back.
Okay,
why did this have to come back?
Because it wasn't noticed.
Oh.
Okay. Sorry about that, but thank you.
It's okay. So we'll move on to 1.3, board assignments. And we all have this overview so that we see that we can avoid conflicts and schedules.
Well, and we haven't been totally successful with that, but
I have.
Let me just intro a little bit here. I've got some highlighted because the detail sheet here that has the different colors. The chair is marked by yellow on these. Anna went through each one of those to ensure that we're not just simply following tradition or something that's unwritten, but if there's RCW or county adopted ordinance that specifies each of these, that we would identify which is which. And she identified that two of these, the Finance Committee and the Law Library, RCW law specifies that the chair shall sit on those boards, on those committees.
So there, I'm blocked because I'm the chair. The other two, Audit Oversight Committee and Emergency Commissioner, that we have discretion. And it will be the chair if we don't do anything else, but we can designate another counselor to sit in the chair's place.
It's alternate, you mean?
No, to actually take the first, to be the designated representative.
Oh, I kind of like the way we've always done it. We have a position here.
To be more specific on that, the Audit Oversight Committee says a commissioner.
Okay.
It does not say chair, it says a commissioner.
I'm a counselor, I'm not.
And the emergency board says, where is it? It says chair or designate. In other words, the chair is automatic unless the chair designates someone else.
Okay.
That's on the emergency commissioner.
Okay. Thank you very much, Anna, for that. My thoughts on the Audit Oversight Committee was that, first of all, I'd be happy to sit on that, but I know, Jeannie, you have a real strength in when it comes to that area, and I would certainly invite you to participate in that. That Audit Oversight Committee is made up of only three people: our elected auditor, a representative from
the board,
the county, which is the citizens, which in this case is forensic accountant Tiffany Couch, and a commissioner.
There's actually more than that. He's actually only on the board, but you have
does it say how many members?
Staff.
Well, they're for support, but there's only three actual committee members.
Three members, but they do all the report.
So in the description in our file here, it does say the AO committee. Oh, I see. You back. Is this county code?
Right there. That's the county
code. It's Clark County Code.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so this is not, this is optional. So I'd be glad to sit on that.
Okay.
That would be interesting.
Okay.
I'd appreciate that.
All right, well then we'll put that we'll designate you as the Audit Oversight Committee representative, counselor. Okay.
Good.
So that's.
Now, regarding the emergency commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
I think my advocacy would be that be the board chair. And the reason for that is, and I'm going to need a little help from you. In some of the, so we share a homeland security region with Portland, Clark County, some other counties. That's for Homeland Security. Then we have Emergency Management Region, and it's not always exactly the same boundaries. But if, for the purposes of emergency planning and emergency response, and I know that you've been to a lot of those meetings, so I think in some of those agreements, it designates chair, and I don't know where I'm getting that sticks in my mind. And what they're looking for is one person that has cohesive say and cohesive authority. And usually it's it would be like the chair, and I really do think that's extremely high level. It matters mostly when there's an emergency. And most organizations do an internal document that indicate who is on a committee internally that does emergency management. Mm-hmm. That would normally include the county manager, probably public works,
And risk management.
And law enforcement. So, anyway, I don't know if we have that, if we haven't established formally that committee. Oh, we do?
I sat on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I might share with you, Councillor Stewart, that that Mike Lewis and Cressa staff are going to come to one of my county manager meetings to give you a presentation on emergency management, what we do at the county, how we interact with Cressa, just to bring you up to speed with how
and
we do it here.
How soon would that be?
The next couple of weeks.
Soon. Yeah.
Okay,
and Scott
good.
Johnson will be doing that presentation, who you worked with when we went over to RDPO.
Great. So I'm glad to know that because that changes my commissioner's report for today. So I'm glad to know that now.
What was that? So. I missed that.
I mentioned to Councillor Stewart that she was talking about emergency management plans and procedures, and I just advised her that we're going to have Mike Lewis and
Scott Johnson from Cressa
come to one of my county manager meetings to give you a presentation on what we do in the event of an emergency, how we plan, how we work together, how we ensure business continuity and that sort of thing.
You're doing so well in those, we're going to have to start charging admission.
So I actually, that was an item I was going to bring forward, so I'm only going to talk about it when I get to that in a very broad overview.
Okay. So in this case, you're recommending that the chair continues to hold that position.
Yeah. And I think, Tom, did you say that you...
Okay, I'm good at
Councillor Milkey.
Okay.
Natural disasters or anything.
Yes,
okay.
And I think
and
that there's...
There will be a pecking order.
Yes, there is. We want to make sure we're at the top.
Yeah, okay, so I will continue to hold that position as the chair. Moving on to the... Well, first of all, I would... If somebody else wants to lead here, you're welcome to. I've got a few more highlighted ones.
A few more, say again.
As the chair, I normally want to accommodate others first. So if you have other things you want to bring, you want to lead on these things, you're welcome to, and then I'll fill in the gaps.
Do we need to cross off FVTV? Or
yes. Axel FVTV is no longer on this list, right?
Correct.
Okay. So that's...
Okay, let me find...
It's in the bottom third.
Bottom third. It's not. What page?
Oh, it's here.
Fort Vancouver TV.
Yeah. On the spreadsheet, you see how they have them X'd? It's under Councillor Medore's name, X.
Second from the bottom.
And does that mean Councillor Medore or Chair Medore?
He doesn't have to go to that because
he's got there. He's freed up.
Because
he's
why?
It's a defunct organization.
Well,
at least it's public.
Or it's in a state of suspended animation.
There was a de-designation last year, and the contract went away. So, per the bylaws, we're no longer on the board.
So, part of the Comcast contract in the long term. I'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, and we have some more updates.
Because
the
there are connections and understandings and accommodations that are part of an integrated agreement with Comcast.
Correct.
So, okay, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Okay. Shall I continue or you want to continue?
Well, you can continue, and then
okay.
when Councillor Milkey and I get perturbed, we'll let you know.
All right.
If we do.
Skipping down to Washington State Association of County Boards of Directors. I think that's Board of Directors. You sit on WASAC.
Yes.
And Tom, you sit on the Executive Director. Is that the way you want to keep it?
Sure, I'd like to do that.
Okay, all right, then. You got it.
What line are you looking off?
So how do you and I coordinate? We need to talk about how we can coordinate because I'm on the Legislative Steering Committee.
Up there? Director.
So you're good with that. Okay.
Councillor Medore?
Yes.
It might be easier to move it along more quickly. You have items that are X'd here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should just take them in order and then each councillor can weigh in as they come to that. Rather than jumping around too much.
Well, I have a full house. I like everything you got, but if you want to take one of them, you may.
That's pretty simple.
But you won't take anything in instead.
I won't take it. You have anything I have.
So in other words, that's a good orderly sequence to go. In other words, no changes, you're good with that.
Okay. Correct.
And Jenny, you've got any changes that you'd like to recommend?
I have some conflicts. That are time wise, and one thing is we should tell CTRAN no, we're never going to do a Thursday night board meeting. They have never, in their history of my knowing them,
I don't think they care.
Doesn't mean we don't tell them. So. But that's a one-time deal. That's in March. So that's a big conflict for me not being able to participate in the legislative agenda, which, you know, that's a critical time frame because we only have, you know, 4, 5, 6 months, really, to have our influence made in that committee. So... there's also...
I have a question. Does this sheet match this sheet?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's why I was recommending that we just go down the line here. And Councillor Stewart is in the process of looking at hers and seeing if she has
any exceptions. Conflicts, they need to be resolved.
Well, and there are a couple different ways. Right now, how I've resolved those for the last 2 months is that for MetroPAC, the transportation, Jeff Swanson has attended that in my stead and brought the material back to me.
We don't vote on anything on that side of the bridge.
No, we have no vote there.
They vote on our side.
It's important to know what's going on because that's the whole metro system, land use planning, and transportation, the whole thing. So it's important we stay in touch. Mm-hmm. JPAC and Bi-State are important, and those are infrequent conflicts. When they conflict, I can find an alternative for that.
Okay. Anything else?
Workforce Development Council is actually quasi-integrated into Columbia River Economic Development Council. They share a facility. They work together on workforce development for job market, and that's really key. There are actually 3 separate committees for Workforce Development Council. The one committee is the Workforce Development County Tri-County Board, and that's Wakayakum, Cowlitz, and Clark. No, Clark, Cowlitz, and Skamania. Sorry. No, this says Wakayakum 2, but when we've met before, there were only 3 of us there, so maybe someone was absent. So that's 4 counties, and as we all know, they get grants, and this board, and they are more regional type grants. So there are some specifically for Clark, some specifically more regional. That's an interesting board. It meets only quarterly. It's very high level. That board I'm really interested in staying on. But it's quarterly. It's not demanding.
And you're already signed up, so you want to just continue?
Yes. So also, the Workforce Development Council has a monthly executive board. That I would like to stay on. There's also a broader board that meets monthly, which is the Workforce Development Council board in general with 35 members.
Well, why don't we do this? If you're already on the board and you want to continue to stay on the board, then... I wouldn't even bring it up.
The one that I'm not wanting to need to continue on is the regular Workforce Development Council board. The other two boards I'll serve on. The general 35-member board, I'd rather work more at the higher-level decision-making and oversight. That board meets monthly.
Which one is that on this spreadsheet?
It's Workforce.
Just the one with the two stars on the right, all the way in the right, right here.
Yes.
Outside the right column.
Yes. And so right now that's assigned to me, but if someone else could pick that up. And I don't know exactly when it meets. It says it meets monthly, but I don't know what the double stars mean on this sheet.
Is there a detail on the other here? What?
It says the board meets, oh, it meets every other month starting in January. Well, it says it's monthly. Wait a second.
Quarterly and monthly. So they've got, they might, oh, there's, that's because they got two boards.
Yes.
The monthly board is the regular board. They both say board monthly.
But the description is inconsistent.
Oh, they got three listed here. Executive yes. board, monthly board, and they got the county commissioner board. So you're speaking of the monthly one, basically.
I'm talking about the monthly board meeting. Well, not the monthly regular board meeting.
I can't sign up for it.
Every other month, starting in January, on the second Wednesday of the month in the afternoon. I'll try to see if I can continue it. And what we may have to do later is look for an alternate.
You have our economic development person there as an alternate. And you could use
Well, and he has definitely filled in the gap.
Mm-hmm. Would it be appropriate for, this is a voting position, right? But basically, I've served on that board, too, and it's a very large board.
It's a very large board.
It's not a...
very much.
Well, it's pretty much unanimous in everything they do.
Yeah.
And so I would think that it would be appropriate for to designate Jeff Swanson to fill that role.
And
as a primary.
Is he now an alternate
well.
For that?
Mm-hmm. And we have that freedom to do that, right?
Person.
He doesn't need to be. Doesn't need to be an elected mm-hmm. official.
Yeah, Jeff isn't listed on this sheet as an alternate.
So we're setting him up as the primary.
Right? Yes, but we should probably talk to the guy about it.
Yeah. Okay, so we volunteer Jeff.
I'm not sure how many we go to these. And maybe we can
and
have
we, you know,
see what's relevant and what's not.
Well, the executive board, you have to go.
Yeah, that one we understand.
Yeah.
But it's the other one that may be more on a
optional
management basis at what they're doing.
I'll be happy to talk to Jeff because we also, rather than just signing him up, we need to make sure it's not a conflict for him.
Okay.
Because
so
he does attend a lot of it.
As a preliminary, Jeff, on that one, for a primary. Anyone to serve as the alternate?
Yes.
All right. What else you got that's a change?
Oh, the Metro Policy Board, we talked about that. The Vancouver USA Tourism.
That's maybe Jeff.
Well,
is a good one for that one as well. I used to sit on that one.
I think it's actually this is money coming out of both the city and the county for lodging tax, and it is really important because there are always people with designs on that money. So it's really important to have a prudent oversight of that to make sure Clark County does not get the short end of that stick. So
that's when I mentioned to you that we need to make sure that we move forward and get the funding for the tourism and woodland from there instead of from our general fund.
Well, and there is a pool of money, and, you know, there are people that are constantly trying to look for more and more resources out of there. So I'll go ahead and keep that assignment.
Okay. I think that would be good. And I like the idea that you'd be there, because if you need to go to bat for Clark County,
I would
you
do
got
it.
The gumption to do so.
Of course, I would be fair and balanced.
Okay.
So those were all my comments. Okay. And other than that, I guess I'm just having my same assignments, as I've only had them for a brief time anyway.
Okay. I see we have totals here. So if we, those totals, so my total subtracts two, so I end up with 17. Because of FBTV, I pulled off, and the Audit Oversight Committee moved to Jeannie. So that ends up, Jeannie bumps up
17,
by
17, 20.
Yeah, so.
New kid on the block always gets to.
The chairman always gets to. I handle all that load when I was the chairman.
Well, and I think if Jeff has time to do the Workforce Development Council, that brings my number back.
Those.
Okay.
Actually,
but I want to talk
actually
to
you still picked up one. You picked up. You had 19.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you and then you dropped one off. That was the okay. So you're back to 19. Okay, so 17, 17, 19. So I have I'm looking to lighten my load a little bit with I really enjoy the ones I sit on, and yeah, and I'm looking
sure
for.
We wouldn't want to take that away.
But I also enjoy getting work done and all the other stuff. So, what I've got here. The Elder Justice Executive Board, it's a good board. They meet six times a year, and I'm thinking, would somebody be willing to take that to free up my schedule a little bit?
Where does that meet?
Right here in the farthest room up on the sixth floor.
And
the first, what do you call that room? Training
first
room?
First room on the floor.
The one on the very end, it's just conference room 678.
Okay.
Is
the
that
east room of the sixth floor.
That's previously been your assignment.
Mm-hmm. I've been sitting, and it's a good board. I really enjoy it, but I want to keep my life sane.
It doesn't take too much time.
And that drops you down to 16.
It's in the afternoon.
Well, or that, well.
Tell you the number of elders have been abused.
There's, well, let me show you.
Thursday's a deal killer. Let me know.
Okay. Well, there's two other ones that I could also. I'm just looking to increase my sanity with bandwidth a little bit, at least on one of these. There's the Urban County Policy Board. That's the distributes the make the decisions on the CDBG funds. It's a really good. They only meet seasonally, and this is the season coming up here. And you take a bus tour one day, and you look at all the different projects that have been in the past and what's on the potential list for this year.
And it's not it's not a Thursday.
And it's
a Monday.
Well, they meet.
I cannot
monthly.
Do the Elder Justice Board.
Okay, so that's
not in this round.
Okay.
And the bus tour is only once a year.
Yeah.
But they meet monthly, right?
Only at the first until we make the decision as where those funds are going to go. The first.
Oh no, it is
part of the year.
Yeah, that's
first it. Quarter, basically.
Yeah, I was looking at the wrong
one. Or the last one is the Law and Justice Council. That's also interesting. They meet here. So, anybody want to take any one of those?
What was the other one you had?
So, the Elder Justice Executive Board, the Urban County Policy Board, which is CDBG funds, and the Law and Justice Council.
And Tina and I staff the Law and Justice Council, so I mean we set things up and go and get speakers and things like that, and then Commissioner Medora's been coming and kind of chairing, so it It's in the morning.
It's a Thursday, though.
I'm looking at that.
I can pick up the elder justice, as long as it doesn't count as...
So
what day is that on again?
Thursday.
Thursday afternoon at 3?
Thursday. So we'll have to look at your chart over there.
Is law and justice as needed?
It's law and justice is monthly, but it kind of, there's holiday things, and then sometimes in the summer we'll cancel one, and then depending on what's going on with speakers. But we typically do try to meet monthly.
It's a conflict with JPAC. Okay.
So, Tom, you're signing up for the Elder Justice Center, or Executive Board.
Yeah.
Kick in, by
thank you, Tom.
I signed up for it.
Okay, you got it.
The Law and Justice is a conflict with JPAC.
Okay. All right.
You want to tell you what to do with JPAC? Are you a voting member on that? Is that the one you don't get? You don't get to vote on.
I love going to JPAC.
Oh, yeah. You? Well, we wouldn't
in that
want to take
liberal
that
environment there, the war on cars environment.
Not exactly. Not that one.
Okay. All right. Then we'll call it done. So the only change on that was. Elder Justice, which is a really good cause. Great, great people. Thank you, Tom.
So who do we have that is going to revise this?
And then she has the master list format. That'll
be revised.
I'm sorry?
We'll have to revise that.
We'll hand it back to you
to
get her done.
We got to memorialize all the decisions.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So you are the master.
I can work with Lene on that if you'd like.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, great. All right, so we're done with that.
And the final count's 18, 16, 20.
Is that right?
I thought it was 18, 16.
I got them.
Is this one 20 or 19?
Well, he got that one.
Okay.
Councillor Stewart got the Audit Oversight Committee added and didn't drop anything, so she went from 19 to 20.
Okay, so Board Assignments 1.3 is done. We're going to move on to 1.4, National Motto, and I guess that's you, Tom.
Rick, okay. I do. So I think you've been given the proposed resolution.
Yes.
You guys all have that. I'm hoping to have a few more things to share with you, more than what I have. Basically what I have today is that we would be the second one in the state of Washington to adopt this. California has 117 cities and counties that have displayed their national motto.
Wow.
And we have over 500 across the nation. The lady I talked to said, if I can get 117 in California, we could probably get 2 in Washington. Pierce County already has it. So I'm gonna get a few more factual things there on that for you.
Okay.
And I'd like to put this on the February 10th consent agenda.
Okay. And the origin of this was a national bill, right?
It's a national group. Started out of Bakersfield, California. This is where it started.
Okay.
And it's national, and it's huge. And I think also gave you a list of all the cities and counties that have already done it. These are the ones that have done it, and they had a few like ours that is pending.
Mm-hmm.
So it's,
all right. So very good. Any discussion on that one? Any further? Okay. A good consensus to bring this forward for the February 10 agenda?
Yes.
Consent? You okay with that?
Yes.
Okay, we're good. The consensus to move it forward.
We have to change the date on this.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, so feel free to polish it as necessary between now and then. Okay, so that wraps up 1.4, and now we're at commissioner reports.
I have Axel helped me out. We've been looking for excess property for a long time, and there's one that we've had trouble with the neighbors because we have another neighbor using it as a farm in the middle of Hazeldale. And so I would like to propose this piece of property as an excess piece of property and put it on the tax list by selling it.
Okay.
We do auctions on the internet. Would this be a piece of property considered to do it there?
Those, Counselor, are properties that are in tax default, and the treasurer auctions them off online. Public Works has I think most likely Public Works owns this. They have a separate process they go through to sell surplus property, but they could apply those procedures to this.
Now we have real estate people here, but yet we don't have listings, so we'd probably hire a real estate, pick a real estate person, a company.
No, we have a real property services shop down in Public Works.
We put signs up on the property and put it on the list of properties. What do you call it?
We have a contractor that does surplus sale auctions.
Okay.
And this property.
So we're just going to be auctioned, or we're going to advertise it like a real estate person?
Well, I think there's still a bit of a decision to be made, Counselor. We do own this property. It's owned by Public Works. If you go way back, you'll remember, and you don't have to go way back because I received a call this week from the gentleman who lives to the third parcel north up there, but not to be too specific. But the parcel just above the one we own, which is the one in red, that is the LaDuke farm. It's a small farm that we... Year and a half, 2 years ago, began receiving some complaints about. There was a lot of pigs on the property, a lot of birds and roosters, and at the time they were actually, Mr. LaDuke was, with some degree of permission, utilizing our piece of property as well for some of the birds and goats and alpacas and things he had to graze on. We got involved in that, and we worked with Mr. LaDuke on a voluntary agreement to kind of downsize a number of animals and things that he had there to try to make the situation better for some of the neighbors. In that process, we began looking at this property and assessing the need for it. Now, this was originally purchased by Public Works because our long-term transportation plan calls for the widening of Hazeldale Avenue in the future. And when we do that, we anticipate it will need stormwater facilities. So this parcel was intended to be bought and used in the future for that. Now, Commissioner Milken, I've talked with Real Properties and others. Well, what's the timeline on that? When's the realistic future of the expansion of Hazeldale Avenue? And, you know, do we really need to sit on that piece of property for that purpose? At one point, Mr. LaDuke had an interest potentially in moving, and we even looked at purchasing that parcel, splitting the parcels, and that's where the Habitat for Humanity discussion happened. I think last year we had a discussion with the Department of Environmental Services. Habitat for Humanity was interested in putting a home on half of the front half of that parcel, leaving the back half for the stormwater use as well as the LaDuke parcel potentially. We never got too far down there because we didn't have a for sure timeline on the expansion of Hazeldale Avenue, so it just didn't make sense to go through with that idea. But we explored it, we discussed it, we talked about it. So I talked to Pete downstairs in DES. I asked him where we're at with Habitat. He said that's gone nowhere. It's idle because we didn't follow through with the LaDuke farm. He's still there. So bottom line is Commissioner Milkey's right. Public Works still owns this piece of property. They own it for the purpose of a future stormwater facility retention pond. We have fenced it so that the animals are not on it, and they're staying on the LaDuke property, so there is a fence running on that top red line now, but that's what's going on with it.
So who is another northwest of here across the street? It's another piece of property there. It looks like it could be used for water retention.
Yeah, it does look undeveloped. I don't know the specifics about it.
That looks like if we ever come around to it, I would think it'd probably be annexed into the city before we actually widen that.
Yeah.
And we could come over and look at that for a stormwater facility if that's what's needed. Who owns the path from the school?
My understanding.
Where's the school?
So the school is to the left. Here. You see the track kind of looking the big open
yeah.
area? So
what school?
It's the elementary school, right?
Thomas Jefferson?
I think so, yeah.
It's okay. What?
Thomas Jefferson, maybe?
Losing the name, but it's the...
What's this cross street that curves in the lower section, lower left of the...
Oh, it's like 100 and...
That's a hard question.
I'm trying to get...
it's north of 99.
So if you take the 78th
down around
street...
the curve.
You get off at 78th Street, hang a left... and you'll hit Hazeldale Avenue. You make
yes.
a right, or make a right right there and go north.
Yes.
You come right here.
Okay, but that doesn't look familiar to me, so it must be north of 99th.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're right.
Yeah, I think it intersects with 117th shortly.
That's what I'm thinking,
yeah.
too.
Yeah,
just to the north.
It's quite far out.
Yeah.
So, Axel, talk to... Public Works and see if they know, see if we own this over here.
Okay, I can find out.
I got this crazy feeling we might own that over there too. And then.
Maybe I invite Pam Mason or somebody from Real Properties, Heath, to come up and just talk you through.
Do a preliminary. I would like.
Do we need it or not? Why don't we do this? Why don't you just have them write up something about that property and the adjacent related properties, the trail property, the one diagonal across the street. And if we ever do widen that, what plans, what resources are they going to use in order to handle the stormwater? So just
for reference, there's a school, mm-hmm. and there's 117th right there.
This is south of there.
My impression was that the path is owned by the school. Maybe when the development to the south there went in, it was required to, you know, have some access or easement. I mean, that was my impression of what I remember, but I'll double check that.
Mm-hmm. So,
that's a nice
included in the information, I'd be interested in the comp plan designation, the zone, what kind of infrastructure's in there. If we own it, if we have an estimated value.
Yeah. What's the purchase history? What did we pay for it? When did we buy it?
Yeah.
Did there used to be a house on there we demolished?
And then the interest in that property, that is, what would it be, north and west? Looks like there's a little series of circles, like maybe a baseball diamond or something.
Keep looking. You're going to get there.
Yeah.
If he's inquiring about that. And that's under any consideration if it's county owned.
This is our little database.
Okay.
So package of information, mm-hmm. is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
So that we can be knowledgeable.
Yeah. So bring the pertinent information
so we'll
back.
Okay.
And just get it to us ahead of time.
Do a parcel by parcel.
So we can take a look at it and bring this back next week after we got the data, okay?
That'd be good.
All right.
We're anxious. You know, we need to put this back on the tax rolls.
What do you call this property?
Big fun.
Well, Commissioner Milkey calls it Hazeldale property, which when I went down there to do the research, I was like, wait a sec, which, because we have a couple in Hazeldale that we talk about sometimes, so I figured it out. But, it's just the Hazeldale property next to the Ladue
okay.
Farm.
Right.
Okay, so just for the purpose of disclosure, none of us have any friends that want to buy this, right?
Right.
No, but it's looking pretty good to me.
Okay, so that we'll bring that back with more data, and the data will be provided to us ahead of time. Great. Thank you. What else you got, Tom?
Next thing on my agenda here is we need to address Judge Zimmerman's project at the Mayberry Park. And he has funds already available. He has the golf family already going to do some donating of the dirt material. And we haven't taken action. He's moved so fast on this thing. And I guess the lady in charge of the Mayberry Park up there is supporting this. And I think we have to do a resolution or something to allow it.
Yeah, so I dug into this. There's a couple pieces. So Judge Zimmerman's working fast. He's getting partners, like Councillor Mielke said, he wants to get busy on this covered gazebo picnic area and flagpole up there. He initially started engaging, you guys might remember, like November, December, started engaging with Jim Muir and Marty about, you know, design and what needs to be submitted for permits, or could the permits be waived, and that whole discussion. That led to him sitting down with Mark Gassaway and with Mike Westerman, who I had a conversation with today. What Mike told me was it's okay for him to move forward with the project, but what probably would be the best bet is for the Board of Councilors, because it's county-owned parks property, to pass a resolution saying we're aware of the project, we know what it is, and it's okay to do on our property. That's part one of the resolution. Part two, Mike thinks it would be smart to, in the resolution, designate a county project, either parks person or public works person, as a lead. So now we've said it's okay to do it on our property in a resolution, and we've created a link via staff that's coordinating the project with Judge Zimmerman. So those two things in the resolution, and then secondarily, we need to continue. I think Chuck Kreider and Jim have worked with Judge Zimmerman on what needs to be submitted for kind of engineering of the actual structure so that they can approve it. So that's okay. Kind of where it is.
Where we were last time is that it was a concept, an idea, everybody liked it, but we didn't have any specifics or enough specifics. So we were waiting for those specifications, the clarity, in order to know what we're going to be approving. So if the staff, everybody associated with that, can, if they're satisfied, that when they get satisfied with enough, then I think that'd be the appropriate time to bring this forward.
Yeah, and I spoke with Marty and Jim Muir, but they didn't know if Chuck Kreider down there, our lead in the permit center, had some conversations with him or not, because Chuck's out today. But that's right. On the permit side, we were left with, we just got to get the engineering, the specifics, so that we can approve the structure as safe.
Okay. Certainly, Judge Zimmerman's an amazing guy, and the way he champions these things, I just think he must have three or four clones to go everywhere and do everything he does. So I assume that this resolution would be supported by a staff report that would include Chuck Kreider and whoever Marty thinks would be the right people on this, and that would advise us of their recommendation to move forward. If they can provide that and they're recommending, yep, they got enough definition, then sure, I would think we'd bring it forward and move it along.
Next steps would be?
Well, so that's a good question. Do you want to wait on the council resolution saying it's okay to put this on county property and this is our project manager? Do you want to wait on that until Marty's got something submitted for permits, kind of a legitimate design and engineering, or do you want to move forward with the resolution saying we're okay with this, but it needs to get the right permits? I mean, I can do them at the same time, one before the other. One's a council resolution, though, that I assume Peter or I would prepare for you with a staff report saying we think this is okay, we like the project, and this is going to be our project manager, and we could handle that up here. The second piece is Marty and Jim being comfortable with what design is being permitted.
I think I understand that there's no problem with an engineered diagram of the shelter that they want to put. We just have to get Judge Zimmerman to give it to our staff.
Right.
To move forward with the resolution. So maybe that would be the way to do it, is to...
Well, and maybe designating a project manager help that.
Yeah, do that and have that manager get a hold of Judge Z and
step by step tell him what he needs to provide.
Yeah, I mean, he's almost got it built.
I would encourage Judge Z is a get-it-done guy in ways, and he's also a visionary. But if our staff can help them to bring specifications and turn that idea into reality to accommodate him, I would think that would be, we'd all win. Were you going to say something?
Yes. All those same wonderful features about Judge Z, I want to make sure that we don't skip any of the appropriate steps. So pictures or ideas don't cut it for project approval. For anybody else, this would have to go by all of the same standards of anybody that would be asking for a project and would be submitting appropriate drawings, all the things that need to be submitted. And I really don't want to move forward with it conceptually. I'd like to wait until all that work is done and to do it by the book, actually, so that there's never a question about it later. And probably a project manager.
I think that's the secret to it.
One of the things that we want to be mindful of, though, is that it's a project manager that can hear a lot of information and can narrow it down to a very narrow focus of what specifically needs to be done and who's qualified to do it. Mm-hmm. So that everything comes from a qualified professional, internally or externally.
Now, one consideration is we don't want volunteer effort, monetary resources devoted to this, only to subsequently tell him, no, he can't do it.
Right. In other words, our intention, I think, is to help him move along. And rather than say, wait, it's really to say, provide the specifics, move it along. We are waiting for you. You're not waiting for us. Our intention is to support you, but we need to know specifically what to support.
Okay, very good.
And that's our project engineer, I think, to push the...
So the consensus is to... that we are supportive of the idea, but the next step, the process needs to be followed to turn it into a real plan.
Yeah, and a lot of these are pre-engineered, so they're easy to permit.
Mm-hmm. It'd be easy to document then.
So I don't really understand the construction industry and all this, but I know that we want to go by the book on this. So whoever would be... the lead on this would also need to make sure that if any of the labor is going to be volunteer, that the standards are still maintained in the process.
And that was another...
And that's a little tricky.
Well, and that was another concern that Mike Westerman had. Except for our involvement, all of the labor needs to be volunteer. Otherwise, we need to...
Another discussion about prevailing wage
and those things. So that's what a project manager needs to outline.
And to make sure that every single bit of that construction is the same as, because we want it to be sustainable.
Well, inspections will occur to make sure the work is of suitable quality.
Sure. Great. Okay.
Okay. All right. So that was a good topic.
A whole list of good topics there.
So here's what we hope does not happen, because we certainly want to have a positive thing we want to communicate there, but what we don't want to do is get read our message that we're just going to hold because we need to make some bureaucratic work. We are encouraging them to turn it into reality and plans and follow process. And the ball's in their court. They're not waiting for us. When they get there, we're optimistic that hopefully be a good plan that our staff will get behind as well.
I'm going to run with the assumption that Mark's going to tell me to talk to Heath and Marty and get Judge Zimmerman the help he needs immediately.
Get it done.
You saved me from having to do that.
Yeah.
What you said.
Give it back to you.
What else you got, Tom?
Some discussion that we never come to, and it's coming real slow, and that is the advertising bills that we put out for to the Columbian and to the Reflector. One of the things that I had one of the staff members bring back what we did to adopt it. I thought we did a resolution and passed it, but he's searching for that paperwork where we signed it. Because what he showed me was more of a report that I got from Mike Westerman rather than something where we actually signed off on the action that we took. And the other problem that we had, when they brought that stuff back to me, that same piece of paper you have there, it looks like it's a splitting of definition of words that caused our staff to continue to use the Columbian to its fullest extent. And that is that they said, well, when we did the newspaper of record, that was only for public notice or for legal notices. And when, in fact, the discussion that we had for 3 hours on that in the hearing room and the direction and the intent that the board gave them at that time was that it was to be provided for all the advertisements that we had to do for our notices. And the discussion was that make sure that our staff did our notices in time. And if it was something that was out of the ordinary and it was a short notice and couldn't be put out there in time for the reflector to do it, that they would place it in the Columbian. But that it looks to me like they've done all their advertising for commissions and advisory groups at the Columbian. And one of the things I had a, he's not here, yes he is, I have a lunch bet on with Peter Silliman that they advertised in the Columbian for that North County Cemetery District. And I'm waiting to have my lunch. But the point is that, you know, I think we need to go back and evaluate that and see if the board's intent is still the same or if we need to get better direction. And that's kind of what I'm left with the impression of by the information that was provided back to us as to why we did it. Because one of the last pieces of paper I gave to you was, please justify all these charges here that were on a regular basis from our staff and purchasing staff on a regular daily basis that we were ever doing advertising for positions and whatnot in the Columbian where it wasn't supposed to be that way.
When annually we ask the board to designate a legal paper of record, we do so because RCW 6516-020 requires that we have a policy to print all statutorily required legal notices in a paper that is formally recognized by the governing body as the legal paper of record. There are all kinds of other advertisements that the county puts out that are not statutorily required. And so the selection of the Columbian as our paper of record only applies to a limited number of advertisements. And I've got a little spreadsheet here. I've got copies for each of you that shows that the amount that we paid the reflector increased substantially starting in July of this year compared to July of last year because the effective date for the reflector being our paper of record was 1 July 2014. And so spending in the Columbian went down by $2,200 over that period this in 2014 versus 2013, but it increased about $6,000 for the reflector.
No, the spending in the Columbian went up.
Yes, but not for statutorily.
Not for statutorily
legal notices. Required legal notices. Yeah. And when we had this discussion, I do not recall that we talked about every single thing we wanted to advertise. My recollection is we were only talking about statutorily required legal notices. And I can go back and listen to the hearing.
So would that include all of the notices of public hearing?
Why don't we do this? Why don't we...
And then I want to answer.
Well, I think there's not only that answer, but there's more of a two-way conversation for you guys to be able to get to handle this one-on-one, learn more information before we bring this back for another board meeting.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that we need to decide as the board what the intent is. I recall 3 hours of testimony out in the hearing room as to what the discussion was.
And we do. The process of sorting that out, though, I think you guys are not on the same wavelength yet.
We've gone as far as we can go. He gave me what I asked, and it shows basically the legal notices that were put out there, but didn't address all the other things that were put out there because he said the intent of the board was not clear. So I'm bringing it back to the board to say the board needs to decide what our intent was and then probably come back with a resolution to be clear. Because I think that action, I think the original action was here, but I think it still went out to the hearing we actually had on the consent agenda, and that's what took the 3-hour discussion out there.
So, Mark, you have something there. Is that for a copy
for
us?
Well, this was given to me. I don't know what the intent of this is. It's not the complete staff report.
But that is all that was posted on the grid.
Yeah, and that's amazing. Look what's written here. It would just blow your mind because that was more of the public, the disagreement that we had with our purchasing agent that was put here after we took the action.
The bulk of the debate involved cost, and typically you RCW wants you to select a paper of record with the largest circulation. There was a debate regarding which of the two papers had the largest circulation. We talked about the frequency of publication, the fact that the Columbian is a daily, the Reflector is a weekly, and that was going to have timing implications for us in making public notice. And then we also discussed the cost.
Yeah.
And
Mark,
so it was a wide-ranging debate, but yeah. It never did we talk about the full range of advertising. Yeah. We were focused strictly on legal notices.
Yes, and there's homework to be done. And so you've got a document here. I would say if there's any other associated documents that Tom that you have or that Mark that you have, go ahead and provide them to us so that we can focus on gathering the information that's relevant. And then we'll have some, we can find out from there what's the appropriate course to correct if there be a one moving forward, okay?
So
and I would encourage you guys, talk one-on-one.
Well, we're good. But I asked staff to go back and look to see if they could find it by the date that was published on here, if we could find that related date as to the action that we may have taken out in the hearing room.
So if you can find any of that, I would say feed them to Mark, and Mark will feed them to us, and we'll be able to have.
No, Peter's doing it.
Oh, Peter. Okay, great. So you're
Mark
you're the,
doesn't know how to do that.
Well, he knows how to delegate. So Peter, you're the clearinghouse for information for us, and if there be one-on-one conversations that we can make more ground and we can all somehow better understand this whole topic, that would be. We'll come back with. A more productive board time.
And I'd like to put the task on my colleagues here to go over what you thought that we decided on so we could come back and discuss it, what we thought the intent was, what we were doing.
And
okay?
As a reminder, I wasn't here when that action was
taken,
so I have no... Well, I understand.
Okay.
But any documents that are accumulated here, I'll certainly read.
Okay.
It was at one time my understanding that it seemed financially prudent to move as much of the advertising or publishing to the Reflector as possible, as that, you know, what is it, 60% of our population is rural. And that has a broad rural distribution. So but that's only in conversation that I've heard along the way. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
I don't know details.
So feed us information.
Sure.
And we'll welcome that. What else you got, Tom?
One more thing. Listener, today we talked real briefly as to changes in urban growth boundaries for Ridgefield, but there was also a change that was inserted. And when they displayed it the other day on the work session, it included an expansion of the urban growth boundary for La Center that went north along the freeway and then crossed the freeway. And when they were asked, two work sessions back, when we asked La Center what that was for, they said it was to serve those high-end houses over there on that side of the freeway where they're not needed to be served. And so I think that we need to make sure that Oliver understands that was not supportive of the council.
Okay, so in other words...
He has both, yeah.
So the question is, why in the world would they cross over the freeway?
Mm-hmm.
And so we look for questions. Peter,
but
can you
add
that
afterwards? They actually had the original going north and going around the station. I'm not sure why they went around that station. And then they added that other part later because we asked them about it.
Do you have something to contribute on that?
My recollection of that was, or the explanation I remember from the work session was, all the request was on the east side of the freeway, but when they touched the right-of-way, it automatically included all the right-of-way of the freeway, so that's why it appeared to go over to the other side and include the off-ramps.
Did they have to touch the right-of-way?
They only did it in one spot.
Well, what I'm saying is that their request isn't there. Oh. It's just the way it showed on the map because
so the map needs
the
to be corrected.
Shows,
okay. Yeah, can you work with planning to see if that's a correction that needs to be made so it reflects
over.
The truth?
Yeah, over.
Okay, great.
I was hoping to have an update on how the animal control...
on the what?
Animal control. Oh. We started a new program with animal control that when they go out in the field and pick up the dogs, or dogs or cats or whatever, they actually enter it into the laptop.
It's a Surface Pro 3, and I've reported on this half a dozen times in the last few months. They've got the Surface Pro 3s. They have remote access.
Great.
They
got the photographs.
I don't know whether they're putting photographs in or not, but
your report didn't include that.
How about we get you a ride along?
No, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking to move to phase two. And in that phase two is that I wanted that information that they had, able to take a picture of the animal that they picked up. So when they picked up that animal, they had a photograph of that. And then that was going to interface with our office here.
With our type
so when someone lost their animal, they could go to animal control and find out what time that dog was picked up, where it was picked up, and where Fluffy might be at the time. So we were hoping, and then the idea of doing it in the field is that we didn't duplicate the work. We used to go out there to work and do hard copy, then come back here for the second half of the day and enter it into the computer.
What I would encourage you to do, Tom, on this one, also work one-on-one with Mark to nail down those details. When you get something that's defined for us to make a decision on, you bring it forward.
Okay.
Yeah, I was unaware of your desire to do the photos.
Surface Pro 3 has
you
a camera.
You asked me about plan two. Phase two.
How about phase three? What's phase three?
Well, I have phase three coming, too.
You can handle that one-on-one. What else you got?
I want to say that I think that is a very good idea.
Yeah, neat. And if you lose Fluffy, you know where it is.
Well, if I lost my animal, I'd like to be able to go online, get it, you know, see, I'll know when it was missing,
yeah.
So find out what animals they picked up, what location,
and
that's less impactful to the animal, too. The sooner you can recover a dog that you really wanted,
mm-hmm.
You know, there may be people who go, I don't want to look, but I think that is smart and effective,
mm-hmm.
And I think it'll save calls, it'll save Humane Society unnecessary visits, it'll clean up process. So as a former dog owner, my dog passed away, but I would have surely wanted that.
Yeah, that's what we thought.
It sounds like they might be duplicating the work of the Humane Society. I would think that if our animal control picks up an animal, they're not going to keep it. They deliver it to the Humane Society. Humane Society, I would assume, would take a picture of it, would post it on their website, and that would be the first place people would look. Isn't that?
We're the ones that pick it up. We're the ones responsible for it.
We pick it up, but we deliver it in a matter of an hour or so to the Humane Society.
But we deliver it. Then we used to come back here and do the work, so you wouldn't even know until later on, the next day. This way, you know right away, your animal's been picked up. It's picked up at 2:05 in the afternoon at such and such a location, and you know it's either still on the truck or en route.
Well, they're never left on the truck. They take them to the Humane Society same day, right, Mark?
Same day.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
they,
yeah, so I would think
could be in the afternoon or in the morning. Or,
so
anyway,
I would think the Humane Society would automatically have a website that would show that we picked up these animals today, and here's the pictures of them.
Mm-hmm. Or we could charge the Humane Society a fee for uploading the photos.
Very careful, Mr. Chairman. You're assuming. You're
well,
there about assuming.
At this point, I would encourage you to. This is your project. Work with Mark to ensure that the right jurisdiction does the right thing.
You gave to me 2 years ago. This is a project you gave to me 2 years ago. One more thing that came. We had a bill presented to us for a stolen picture out of our hallway here. And so I want to be clear as to when we allowed the gallery to be placed out here, are we responsible for that, or is that for display of the talented people that put them up there to sell them? Because we were billed, apparently, you know about the stolen one?
I have not seen that bill. I am aware that a piece of artwork was stolen, but I can't imagine.
It came through on a sheriff report.
A few weeks ago,
and they won $300 for the stolen artwork that was done.
That was how much they wanted to sell it for. I don't believe they're asking us to reimburse them for the lost artwork, because
It was a claim,
because I saw it too.
Oh, one of the risk forms. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to deny that.
Well, I want to make sure that we work together, but we don't want to put guards out there. It's alarmed out there. I'm surprised.
They were alarmed, then they removed the alarms, then they put the alarms back on. One of the alarms actually fell off a piece of artwork and didn't go off. So, I'll pull the agreement with them. I can't imagine that the previous administration would have allowed them to display art with us being financially liable.
Yeah.
It's got to be at their risk.
I would think that they would carry their own insurance.
And, correct.
Yeah. Okay, so I know that
somebody went to adjust the picture one day. And the alarms went off. And it wasn't straight, so they went to straighten it.
So Mark's going to look into that and see what you do to bring
it. That was a sheriff claim. I mean, one of the sheriff claim forms that comes
It's the risk management.
Okay. Yeah.
We will not pay that claim.
That's quite a while. We probably already paid it. And it's not that it's going to break the bank. It's just that when we work in conjunction with somebody that we don't want to be picking up. So, okay. No, you might be lucky enough to. We're good.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Commissioner Stewart.
Okay, I have just two items. So I did go to Portland to the Regional Disaster Preparedness Organization. This was about a week and a half ago. This is an organization for the region for disaster preparedness. And I believe you sat on this last year. And
actually, I never went to any meetings. I think I never sat on it. There was anticipation that a commissioner would.
Yes. So,
but never get assigned to it.
Okay. So whoever was on it last year, and I wasn't here, so, and I'm talking to our regional CRESA people. So I had a meeting with them about regional CRESA issues, and they said this meeting was going to be taking place and that we are a member because we're part of the region. We're one of the counties in the region. So the background on this is that the City of Vancouver also assigns a member for this. So whomever represented the county and the city, and I think it was it you? I'm sorry, I had the people mixed up. Went to the meeting last year, one of the last meetings that we attended, and indicated that in our financial participation, which is approximately $30,000, maybe $35,000, and that's a cost that we share with City of Vancouver, that both the City of Vancouver and our representative there said, we really want to pause in our contribution because we don't see that you are as organized on our behalf as we would expect or we would want. And we believe that we'd want to see some improvement until we would consider financial participation. Now, let me make it clear, we are in the region and if we had a disaster, of course we would be served as well. But the reality is, this way we are participating in the planning. So when I attended this, apparently whoever were the last people that were there had asked for a report on the list of accomplishments for 2014 to ensure that something favorable had actually occurred. So thank you for that. They did provide the list. They have made some substantial improvement.
Okay.
And so after we get our report, is it next board time?
March meeting. It'll probably be two weeks.
That's fine.
Yeah, 2 weeks. And Scott Johnson. Yeah.
So at any rate, I told them that I would bring the information back. I would share it with my commissioners. And based on what it was before and the improvement that we've seen, we could reconsider or not reconsider. So in the meantime, I went to the city representative and said, will you take this to your manager or council and show them the improvements that are made and see if you have any interest in joining with us to go back into this organization with a small financial participation. So Larry Smith did meet with, I think, the mayor and the manager. And based on the improvement that's seen, because Larry has been on it for a long time, they said that if we're interested, they're definitely interested.
Okay.
But I don't think they're eager to go it alone. I think they're kind of...
Yeah.
So we'll be, in a couple weeks, we'll be getting more information about this directly from CRESA. But it was CRESA, our folks, that... suggested going to this to at least take a look at what the improvements are. So that's just on the back burner.
Okay. Just one bit I want to correct, because I recall, I think there was one meeting last year, and I ended up being the designated person. That's me. And a number of the members attended virtually, and it was someplace quite a distance from here in Oregon.
Yeah.
And that the whole meeting, all those members had blank screen and technical difficulties, and they were not able to get that GoToMeeting or whatever that virtual.
They're not using that anymore. This is a show up in person. The room was clear full. There were maybe two empty seats, but it was
well
a
attended.
Big part, very well attended, and people seemed very pleased at progress that had been made.
That did not work.
it wasn't just the city of Vancouver and Clark County that was not necessarily satisfied with their ability to kind of bring it together in a carefully managed way.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were eager to be there, and they were eager to hear, okay, primarily they were there to get that 2014 list of achievements.
So I think I was there since you've been there. And
you were.
So you were with me.
Yep.
When we went. And at that time, they still were light years behind us. We already have our emergency plan put together, and they were just starting.
Yeah.
And part of the problem that we had with them is that they were starting to build the bureaucracy of paid people to run this operation, and we didn't see the need for it at the time. And our CRESA at that time said, no, we're going
to...
They asked us, please come so we could help them.
Yeah.
We couldn't see paying them $30,000 to come and teach them to bring their emergency response teams
and
up. So.
That,
and they may have
that
improved.
That
so
has been
good.
Dropped off the board as far as I can see. Yeah. There is no talk about that whatsoever.
Yeah, and that was the message last year. We sat in this room. We got
really
the
year already.
Well, almost. Time flies. But CRESA did come over at the time. It was Cheryl, and Anna, and we got the presentation from them on kind of where our position was, how we felt about that regional organization. And at the time, Commissioner Mielke and I went over there, and Commissioner Mielke and Larry Smith, Don Chaney from CAMAS, kind of carried that message forward. We also sent a letter ahead of time. But I think Councilor Stewart summed it up perfectly. I mean, it was a better meeting. We went over there. We met ahead of time with Councilor Smith and Cheney and the CRESA staff. Scott Johnson's now come on board. He's got some different feelings and opinions about the value of the organization, especially on the relationship level and what we can get out of it if something were to happen and planning and all of that. So I think what CRESA staff wants, and especially Scott, who is going to be part of the discussion in Mark's meeting with you all with Mike Lewis, is just another conversation with you about that organization and maybe where we go in 2015. And that was all we committed to when
right.
we went the other day.
So the bottom line, this was informational to us.
Yes.
There's nothing we can contemplate at this point.
Well, I think not until we hear...
Yeah.
In that joint meeting with CRESA,
okay.
because I can offer my observations, but the CRESA people are really our experts.
Okay.
I didn't talk to them after the meeting, but they generally seemed pleased.
Okay,
that
very good. Thank you.
Bledsoe, was that the name of the lady?
No.
Bledsoe.
She's moved on. Cheryl.
Yeah, I know that. I'm just trying to.
No,
she was the one that headed up, and we also did a deal over at the airport.
Yeah.
And
it's Anne.
Anna Pendergrass is the
yes.
director of CRESA, and she went with Scott Johnson, who is
yeah.
the emergency management director.
He must have been there a long time ago.
So, other item, I believe I distributed to you and Counselor.
Milky.
No, I know your name. It's just your title, you know, that's stumbling. So there were several pages of bills that have gone to the WASAC Legislative Steering Committee. And I gave you guys copies of what they sent me that we tried to discuss on a webinar. And we're unsuccessful because of technical difficulties. However, I could hear most of what we were talking about. And I made notes on a few of them, but if you can both take a few minutes to look at the legislative list that I gave you, it would be helpful if you have feedback for me, because you may see things you think are really high profile. So local public works assistance funds, they're talking about some pilot projects that could be very interesting. There was a question about a revolving fund. One of the things we want to make sure is we're not supporting stuff that competes with the Public Works Trust Fund funding, because that is more generalized. So this is an issue paper for House Bill 1569, and it just kind of goes through some of the issues. And these are some that they highlighted. E-cigarette, vaping products, taxation for that. They're profiling that issue, too. So in addition to what we're doing and Mike Burgess is doing.
It's a different number than the other one.
It might be, because this is about a week older. Well, or this might be, what is
that?
That's
on e-cigarettes, too?
Yep.
This is...
Whose bill is that?
I don't think the bill was numbered yet, because this is only a general discussion.
Well, the number you gave was the 1569.
Pardon me?
1569.
It could be. It's not noted on this page. So of specific concern to me, and I've plagued you all multiple times about this and won't miss another opportunity, it's a transportation bill. It's House Bill 1180 and Senate Bill 5128. It authorizes its high-capacity transit service. concerning it is a fay and Lias had submitted it concerning dedicated funding sources for high capacity transportation service. Authorizes a regional transit authority to impose a regular property tax. That is the best thing it does.
Feedback on that. Talk about taxation without representation. RTC is governed mainly by unelected bureaucrats. Can you imagine handing that taxation power to a bureaucracy,
yes,
unaccountable to the people? I'm thinking they are not playing on the citizens' team. They're playing in a special interest team. And
yes,
boy, that makes me
and
very motivated.
So the Senate bill has a certain criteria they outline for which kinds of counties can use a description of certain characteristics of counties that can use this. So Sound Transit can use this. This could also be used in Clark County because we meet precisely the criteria that's outlined coincidentally
in
here.
And run around the people.
And it can be agencies participating in regional high-capacity transit system development are authorized to levy and collect the following voter-approved local options: an employer tax, special motor vehicle excise tax, regular property tax, sales and use tax, and then it goes on later to talk about it incorporates modifications to RCW 81-104, which are the empowerment and restrictions on high capacity transit. It modifies some of 81-104. So, and this applies to all cities that operate transit systems, county transportation authorities, metropolitan municipal corporations, public transportation benefit areas, and regional transit authorities may submit authorizing propositions to the voters. So it's something to be very concerned about for our county. I'm not quite sure which thing you want to see. I think Annette Cleveland is on that bill too, on the Senate bill.
She is not playing on the citizen team.
Well, at any rate, so obviously this caught my attention. Obviously this is a high-level concern. I don't know. Do we know where this is in the process?
I don't know exactly where it is.
Okay,
so I'll have to find out.
I've had two conversations with Mike Burgess about this. Mm-hmm. His initial impression was not to be concerned because it's really directed toward Sound Transit.
Yeah, sure.
Well, Sound Transit, but just coincidentally, we meet the criteria too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we should hit it with a big stick, as you say.
A WASAC list?
Because here's my concern. This is sweeping. When you talk about local transits being able to authorize property tax, and what I don't see written in here is the control of how that money can be spent. So they say high-capacity transit. If in any way any part of it goes into a general transit, then you're going to see these kinds of additional layers of taxation for things like bike trails, walking trails, high-capacity transit. And none of this is about highway or street improvement. None of this is about vehicles. And let me just tell you one of my big concerns. This is just being old and having been around for a long time. One of the things that I've seen happen over and over again, to get this initiated, all it would take is to ask the voters who've already been asked about raising sales tax for high capacity transit and said no. We don't want it that bad. We don't want to tax ourselves more. So that is intended to be recharacterized so that the vote isn't really about that anymore. It's the happy vote, which would be, don't you think all these employers who have all this money in the bank ought to be paying a payroll fee or a per employee fee to support public transit? And the problem is voters can be manipulated into supporting something that really ends up having much broader implications, because it's people do the best they can to be informed, but we repeatedly see them get confused or whatever, especially on these really difficult, complex issues. And so to, you know, it's worrisome to me that it can be put forward that way. So
I thank you very much for reading through that and giving the heads up. I would think that we ought to
direct. I have read the bill as well. I have a copy of the Senate bill, and I've read that.
Anything that
disturbing
that hands the football to special interests to find a way around the people to either misrepresent or misuse their resources, we ought to oppose that and direct Mike Burgess to do so. Agree?
Well, he wondered, what one of the things he wondered about is, he in his good spirit, does think that it's targeted specifically toward, sound transit, people repeatedly fail bond measures, 81-104 expansions, and anything to do with expanding light rail over there. It has failed the last few times it's been on a ballot. So what he said is, it really looks like a way that they can continue to fund their expansion up there. And so he said, what if the bill specifically said, this is designed for King County or Sound Transit or whatever. The problem is, in my eyes, being a skeptic, not a cynic, but a skeptic. Mm-hmm. In the next legislative session, all you need to do is delete that criteria, and then, and you wouldn't even know what's happened.
I agree. So
I think caution.
Well, caution really needs to translate to a direction to Mike Burgess to say, Mike, oppose anything that is a workaround the voters that somehow misrepresents or somehow exploits them. Because 81.104 already needs to be fixed because CTRAN has found a way, at least they think they found a way, to do it even though the people voted not to do it on 81.104.
And, you know, the question is, our opposition isn't to be oppositional, so far as I can see. Our concern is to have an appropriate kind of transportation that's effective and affordable for both the people who pay and the riders.
And community supported.
That's our goal. But we also don't want to be taken to the woodshed and duped into missing something that could put that whole goal in jeopardy. So I did communicate to Mike that I was skeptical that simply adding sound transit language would be adequate for this.
So why don't we do this? Make a motion to direct Mike Burgess to actively oppose these bills.
Apparently a motion.
Okay. Is that a motion?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is Washington Association of Counties?
Yes. Washington State Association.
How in the world did that ever get on that list?
Well, and it was discussed. It was the second to the last item discussed.
So
and it was brought up by these folks as being just about sound transit. But I could not get in to say no.
So in particular, there are itemized bills there that fall into that category.
Two. Well, the House bill and the,
okay, the ones you listed
Senate
there.
Bill.
Yeah, HB 1669, 118, and 1180, and SB 5928. So you have a motion to direct.
Let me double check my numbers.
Did these numbers close up?
I've got HB.
So HB 1180.
Yep.
And SB 5128.
Is it 51 or 5928?
5128.
Okay. And what about 1669?
No, it's one. Was 1569, 1880.
What are we talking about? Let me tell you, the High Capacity Transit Service House Bill is HB 1180, mm-hmm. and the companion Senate bill is SB 5128.
Okay.
So if I said those wrong before, I apologize.
No, you're right.
So is that a motion to direct Mike Burgess to actively oppose HB 1180?
I don't think we need a motion, but I'll make a motion that we give direction to our lobbyists to oppose those two bills.
I second that motion.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Axel, can you make sure that he gets that word?
Yeah, we need a flag.
What else
so
you got?
So we can do the flag allegiance,
it.
Too.
That's funny.
Okay.
And then we'll have an invocation in here.
And I do not have anything. I'm easy. Mark, you got something?
Yes, the Vancouver, I think it's the Vancouver Chinese Association, they hold an annual gala, and they've invited me to attend, and I invited Councillor Madore to come along, and he has a schedule conflict,
yes.
So I'd like to extend the invitation to either or both of you. It is.
I think the vice chair should go.
When is it?
It's on February 28th, which is a Saturday. I do not know the time, but I will get that.
I'm uncertain at this moment, but I'll get back to you. Afternoon, evening?
I don't know. I'll have to get
that. Oh, okay.
Are you serving Chinese food?
Pardon me?
Serving Chinese food?
I would imagine you will.
They usually have quite a
celebration. Gravy.
Okay, so I'll wait until I hear from you, but I'll get you the time frame.
Great.
Pardon me?
I got the email.
Yeah.
Anything else, Mike?
No, sir.
Okay, excellent.
Really?
I apologize for one do-over. I missed the opening remarks on the Regional Disaster Preparedness Organization that you made, Councillor Stewart. It was on our list of things assigned to, and as was mentioned, Commissioner Mielke started last year. You and I, or actually, and you were assigned it. We went once, and then you got up to speed and went. Did you guys designate who's going to be on the RDPO? It's a meet as needed type of thing for the year.
I think
but
you're assigned, aren't you?
Is that okay? We'll just stick with.
I can be assigned. I'd be glad to be assigned.
Is it probably
the easiest?
On the list?
It is on the list. We just didn't talk about it. I forgot.
What's
it
called? On the list?
It says RDPO need written language for assignments. It shows Mielke, Councillor Mielke has an X next to it.
Well, that's because I was the chairman.
Okay, so then
I'm not the chairman
Councillor
anymore.
Stewart?
Yes. Okay. I'll be glad to do that.
Okay. So the revised count is 17, 16, 21.
Well, that one's as needed.
You can tell who's the hard worker here. Okay, is that all?
I get 15.
My desk
Peter?
Work will never get done.
We're scheduling that Cemetery District 5 interview for the commissioners.
Oh, yes.
That will get scheduled at 1 a.m. And I will continue to work on a possible alternative for the conference.
Okay. Anna, you have anything?
No, sir.
You owe me lunch.
Okay. Are we done? Okay.
I'm good.
All right.
I make a motion that we adjourn.
Oh, no. We're going to actually, Mike, come on. Second?
I second.
No.
That's a yes.
Thank you.